Welcome to Torati Machanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chanalei Rappaport, and today we will be learning Sefer Shoftim Perek Yud Aleph, Chapter 11. We ended the last perek with Hashem telling the Jewish nation, I have lost patience with you and with the cycle that we are constantly doing. Hashem will send a Moshiach. He will send somebody to save them. There will be a new Shofet, but it's going to be a lot more compromised, as we will see. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Vayiftach ha-Giladi, and Yiftach from the family of Gilad, which was from the tribe of Manasseh, ayah gibor chayel. He was a strong man, v'hu ben isha zona, but he was the child of a woman who is a zona, literally prostitute, but we'll have to talk about it. Vayoled Gilad as Yiftach, and Gilad was the father of Yiftach. So it could be simply that she was a prostitute, and the Pasuk is telling us, but we do know that his father was Gilad. Other explanations are, a zona could come from the word Beit Mazon, or a house of food, or an innkeeper. Like at the beginning of Yehoshua, we have Rachav, who was called a zona, but the Mefarshim there say that some say she was the owner of an inn. Or perhaps she was a pilegesh, a concubine, not a full wife, but still a wife. Or, interestingly, some of the Mefarshim say is that she came from a different tribe. She came from a different tribe, and she was someone who was going to inherit. Usually the women do not inherit, the sons inherit. But if there are no sons, then the woman can inherit, and it would create a situation whereby the land would end up with a different tribe. Meaning if she came from a different tribe, but now she's marrying someone from Manasseh, and she is supposed to be inheriting the land, then if she marries somebody from a different tribe, then the land will move. So in order to do that, she had to give up all rights to the land. In either way, this is a compromised marriage. Somehow or another, something is not straight with this. And therefore, when Gilad's other wife had sons, and those sons grew up, they threw him, Yiftach, out of the house, saying to him, you are, in Pasuk Beis, verse 2, Ben Isha Acheres Ata. You come from a different wife. You're not part of the regular family. And with no choice, he runs away. Now, the truth is he does have a choice. We'll see that he's very strong, but he chooses not to fight with his brothers. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Vayivrach Yiftach Mifnei Achav, he runs away from his brothers, Vayashav Be'eretz Tov, and he lives in the land called Tov. Vayislaktu al Yiftach Anashim Rekim Vayetu Imai. And surrounding him were empty people. We're not quite sure what the empty people mean, but unemployed people, also people who don't really have a place in society. This is not a positive reflection on the state of the Jewish people at this time. There's inner tension in families. There's inner tension between the tribes. His brothers absolutely should not have thrown him out of the house. Halachically, he should have inherited with them. There's a threat to, as we're going to see, to the half of Shevet Menasha, and no one seems to come or to care. And it seems like because he was known as a strong person, so when the Bnei Amon started up, as we saw in the last parak, the people of Menasha came to him. Vayhi kasher nilchamu Bnei Amon in Yisrael, in verse 5, Pasuk Hey, as the Bnei Amon came to fight with Bnei Yisrael, vayachu ziknei Gilad lakachas es Yiftach me'eretz Tov, and the elders of Gilad come to take Yiftach from this place that he came to live in the land of Tov. And they offered him, they said to him, if you come and fight for us against Ammon, we will make you the katin, which is a general. We will make you the general of the army. And he answers back, seemingly resentfully, in Pasuk Zion, verse 7, Vayomer Yiftach leziknei Gilad, halai atem sineisim aisi. You were accomplices to the crime of the hatred that my brothers hated me. And you sent me out of my father's house. So again, it's not that the elders did, but the elders stood by and watched as Yiftach's brothers expelled him. Umadua basem elai ata kasher tzar lachem. And now you're coming to me? When you have a problem, that's when you're going to come to me? They hear him, and they restate their request, and they say to him, if you come and fight for us, we're going to make you our Rosh. We're going to make you the head of our tribe, meaning we'll make you the new Shofet. And he agrees to this in Pasuk Tes in verse 9, Vayomer Yiftach al Ziknei Gilad, Im Shivim Atem Otzi Lihilachem B'Vnei Amon. If you are going to take me and put me to be the one that's going to fight with Ammon. Benasan Hashem Oysam Lefanai. And Hashem will give them before me. Anochi Ehayelachem L'Resh. I will be your head. Now, it seems like this conversation is not coming from haughtiness. It's not that Yiftach is coming from Gava. He's clearly relating it back to Hashem. Hashem is going to fight. But it seems to be what he's saying is, if I win the battle, then of course I'll be your head. Not because you're making me the head, but that's the precondition that we spoke about in the last parak, that whoever is going to fight is going to be the head. So then I don't need you to make me the head. But what he's saying is, now I need you to agree that I'm going to be the head and that I can truly lead this battle, because I need to have the confidence of the nation behind me, and even more, I need to have the siyata d'shmaya, the divine assistance that will come because I am the Rosh of all of you, that I am the head of all of you, that I'm not acting as an individual. I need to have the help that comes to the tzibur, to the Klal Yisrael, to the entire Jewish nation. So I need you to make me the head now, not just once I win the battle. And they agree to this condition. And therefore, in Pasuk Yud Beis, in verse 12, Yiftach now acting as the head. Vayishlach Yiftach malachim al melech b'nei Ammon, lemar. And Yiftach sends messengers to the king of Ammon, saying to him, why did you start up with us? What is it that you have with us to come and fight? What's this whole battle about? From way back then, since we came into Eretz Yisrael and until now, we're just interested in peace. We see here, first of all, the immense effort that we put into keeping the peace, something very relevant to keep in mind in our days. We don't want to fight. We're not interested in starting wars. And this is not a milchamas mitzvah. We don't have to wipe out Ammon. In fact, we're not supposed to start up with Ammon, but you started up with us. So before we start a battle where people are going to die, let's see if we could figure this out. What's going on here? Why are you fighting? And the answer that they give is incredible. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Vayomer melech b'nei Ammon ha-melech Yiftach. To the messengers of Yiftach, Ki lakach Yisrael es artzi ba'aloysoi mimitzrayim. When you, the Jews, left Mitzrayim, you took my land, me arnon va'ad hayabok va'ad hayardein. Giving him three geographical markers, this was land that you took for us, va'ata, and now hashiva eshen b'shalom. Give it back to me in peace. And Yiftach answers, and he says, in Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, Ve'yomer lo, Ka'amar Yiftach. So says Yiftach. Lo lakach Yisrael es eretz Moav es eretz b'nei Ammon. We never took this land of Moav and Ammon. The land that the king of Ammon is designating is land that he said it didn't belong to Moav and it didn't belong to Ammon. Proof, we're not allowed to fight Moav and Ammon. The Jews have a condition. Hashem says to them, Moav and Ammon, they are your relatives. They're not good people, but you're not allowed to start up with them. You're not allowed to fight with them. And then he'll go into a whole history to explain it to the king of Ammon. And he says, we were in the Midbar, and at the end of the time of our Midbar, we came to Kadesh, and we asked the king of Edom, another nation we're not allowed to fight against, please let us pass through your land. But the king of Edom did not listen. Likewise, they sent to the king of Moab, and he was also not willing. So they couldn't go through the land, he said. So then we journeyed through the Midbar, and we went around the land of Edom and the land of Moab, and we came to the east side of the land of Moab, and we were camping near the Arnon, which you mentioned. We sent messengers then to Sichon, the king of the Emori, who was the king of Cheshbon, and we said to them, let us pass through your land to our place. And Sichon said no and started a war. And we fought that war, and we won this war. This land that you are talking about was not won in a war against you, but in a war against Sichon. Now, Rav Papa says in the Gemara, that really the land originally belonged to Ammon and Moab, but because we can't fight Ammon and Moab, Hashem made it that Sichon, the king of Amori, would have fought earlier with Ammon and Moab, so the land didn't belong to them anymore, it belonged to Sichon. But whatever the case is, Yiftach says, by the time we fought for this land and won this land, we never had a fight with you. We never fought with you, we fought with Sichon, and the land is ours. And then he taunts them and he says, Pasach of Dalad, verse 24. Halai esa sher yorishcha k'mosh alehecha, oisai sirash. You have your God, his name is K'mosh. Whatever your God, K'mosh, allows you to capture, that should be your property. Ves kol asher horish Hashem alekeinu mipanenu, oisai nirash. And we will be able to inherit whatever Hashem, our God, gives to us. And besides, in Pasuk Chafav, verse 26, B'sheves Yisrael b'cheshbon uviv noseho uva'arar uviv noseho v'chol ha'arim asher al yidei Arnon. We've been living in Cheshbon and in its suburbs, and in Aro and its suburbs, and all the cities that are near the Arnon, Shoshme Oshana, 300 years. U'madua lehitzaltam be'esahi. And where have you been for these 300 years? Are you seriously coming to fight now? A quick review of the 300 years. Let's just go through it fast. Yehoshua was with them for 28 years, Asniel ben Kenaz, 40 years, Ehud, 80 years, Devorah and Barak, 40 years, Gitton, 40 years, Avimelech was 3 years, and then we had Tola ben Pua for 23 years, and Ya'ir for 22 years, if you've been doing the math quickly with me. Then you have 276 years, and then we have 18 years that we spoke about that B'nai Amon made B'nai Yisrael work until Yiftach gets up. And then we have the 6 years of Yiftach gives us our 300 years. And he's saying, Yiftach, to them, 300 years we've been here. 300 years since we came into Eretz Yisrael. Now you're coming? But the king of Amon doesn't listen. And with divine help, Yiftach sets up his battle. Pasuk Chaf Tes, verse 29. V'tihiel Yiftach Ruach Hashem. Yiftach does get this divine assistance that he asked for. Ve'yavar es ha-Gilad ve'es Menashe, and he passes through Gilad and Menashe. Ve'yavar es mitzvah Gilad, and he passes through mitzvah Gilad. Umi mitzvah Gilad avar b'nei Amon, and from mitzvah Gilad he passes b'nei Amon. The Ammoni army has left their home territory and is sitting in Gilad, preparing to attack the Israelis. And instead of marching his army directly into the forces of B'nai Amon, Yiftach sneaks around them and heads straight for the now undefended capital and civilian cities of Amon. So the king of Amon realizes that his homeland is completely exposed and he has to abandon his offensive position in Gilad and run back home to save his cities. This disrupts his entire army's formation and it leads them to their defeat. Before Yiftach goes to battle, he makes a promise. He has gone through a very unbelievable process in the last little while. He was a lowly, looked down upon nobody, and now he rises to the level of a leader. And he wants to make something tangible, to make it real, to actualize in a physical and meaningful way this miraculous spiritual and personal growth that he has experienced. Pasuk Lamed 30, Vayidar Yiftach Neder LaHashem. Yiftach makes a promise to Hashem by Yomer, and he says, "Im nason titein es b'nei Amon biyadi, if I'm going to be successful in this battle, v'haya ha-yotze asher yetze midalse beisi l'krasi b'shuvi b'shalom, the first thing that comes out of the doors of my house to greet me as I come back home in peace m'b'nei Amon, from the people of Amon, v'haya l'Hashem, it will be for Hashem, and I'm going to bring it up as a karban offering." It seems like not enough thought went into this promise, and we have to be very careful with things that we say. This is an example of someone who made a condition or made a promise, and it turned out in a terrible, terrible way. The Chazal tell us that part of the problem was that he didn't think it through properly. Amar lo Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to him, "Ilu yatza kelev o chazir o gamal, hayisa makrivasol lefanai ka'ola?" What would happen if it would be a dog or a pig or a camel that would come out? Would you bring that for an ola? How could you make a promise that the first thing that comes out of your house is going to be an ola? Although others say, no, it seems like he did give himself an out from the way that he phrases the question, the promise, as he says, "V'haya l'Hashem, it will be for Hashem." And we translate it, "and I will bring it up as an ola," but it could be translated as either "it will be for Hashem," meaning I will separate it and consecrate it for Hashem, or "I will bring it up as an ola," I will bring it up as a karban in case it is something that is not a tahar and not ra'ui, not pure, and it's not a kosher animal. I can't bring it as a korban, as a sacrifice. He is victorious, and he does manage to vanquish Amon, but tragically, terribly, when he comes home, vayavo yiftach hamitzvah al beiso, and he comes back to his house, and lo and behold, who is walking out? Vihine bitay yetzes likrasai betupim umcholot. His daughter comes out to greet him, and she's dancing with musical instruments. And it tells us, even more tragically, v'rak hi yichida, she is the only child that Yiftach has. Ein lo mimenu ben obas. Besides her, or from her, he doesn't have any descendants. His terrible disappointment and confusion when it's his daughter. Now what? He had this vision in his head that he was going to triumph over Amon and he was going to come to Shiloh and bring thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What should he do? Now, it's interesting because you and I instinctively know the answer. He can go to someone and be mater the neder, meaning we have a dispensation that we have is that when somebody makes a neder, somebody makes a promise and they can't keep it, we do have a way to undo the promise. A person says, I never meant to make this promise, I didn't realize, and certainly he could have done that. We have a strange combination here of Am Ha'aretz, he was an Am Ha'aretz, meaning that he was not learned enough to know this fact, that he was able to do it, and also he had a desire to do the right thing. He had a desire to do the right thing, his daughter had a desire to do the right thing. But they just simply didn't know, which goes back to the central theme that we've been talking about throughout. You need to have Torah. You need to have people going around and teach Torah. To be righteous but not have the Torah learning behind can really lead to the wrong conclusions. This was a response to the low spiritual level of the Jews at that time. You will be saved, but it won't be b'simcha. Your leader won't last long, and as we'll see tomorrow, will die, according to some, a dreadful death. And whose fault is this? And they really, our Chazal, our Rabbanim, really put the blame on Pinchas, interestingly. Pinchas was the Kohen Gadol at that time. Pinchas was certainly a learned man, and Pinchas could have come, and Pinchas should have, when he heard about this, should have come and said to him, you don't have to keep this neder. I'm going to teach you how to be matir the neder. I'm going to teach you how to absolve yourself from this terrible and mistaken promise that you made. But Pinchas says, he needs me, so he should be coming to me to ask. And Yiftach said, I'm going to go to Pinchas. I am the shofet now. I'm the head. I'm going to go to him to ask him. And between this one and that one, and neither of them being willing to come to each other, to lower themselves, to go to the other, they're both going to lose out. It says Pinchas is going to lose his nevuah, and again, we'll see what happens to Yiftach in tomorrow's parak. Let's just end up this parak in Pasuk Lamed Hey, verse 35. When he sees her, vayikra es begadav, and he tears his clothes, vayomer, and he says, aha biti, woe, my daughter, hachreya hichratini, va'at hayis ba'achrai. My downfall did not come from Amon. My downfall came from you. Not that this is your fault, but that I opened my mouth, and here is my downfall. Va'anoichi patsisi piel Hashem, v'lai uchal ashuv. I opened my mouth to Hashem, and I can't take it back. And she also is determined to do the right thing, again, in her ignorance. Pasuk Lamed Vav 36, Batomer Elav, Avi Patsisa Espicha al Hashem, you opened your mouth to Hashem, you made him a promise, Aseli Kasher Yatsami Picha, do to me with what you said, do that. Achare Asher Asalacha Hashem Nekamais Me'avecha Mivnei Amon, because Hashem saved you, and he made you victorious against Amon, and you have to do it. But she did ask for something in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, verse 37. She said, do this thing to me, but harpem mimeni shnayim chadashim. Give me 2 months, ve'elcha and I'll go, ve'yaradati al haharim be'efke es al besulai b're'aisai anaychi. Let me go and let me cry for the fact that I'll never get married and for my friends. Give me 2 months to go down to the mountains and And there I'll have time to process what's going to happen to me. And it was after 2 months, in Pasuk Lamates, verse 39, Batashav El Aviha, she comes back. She didn't have to come back. But we see again that she wants to do the right thing, and she comes back. And he did to her the neder, the promise that he swore. It's very, very unclear what he did, because it could be understood on pshat level, on the simple level, that he actually sacrificed her. Although most of the Mefarshim, like the Radak and the Rambam and the Malbim and the Abarbanel, said that he didn't actually kill her, he just isolated her, as it says at the end of the Pasuk, Vihi la yada ish, and she was never with a man, Vatihi chok bi Yisrael, and it was a chok, which is a commandment in Yisrael. What was the commandment in Yisrael? Either perhaps that that everybody knew that you're never allowed to do this again, or what we're going to continue with in the next pasuk. It's interesting that this is left ambiguous. The way Shmuel writes the story, we can really understand it either way, because it's not necessary for us to know the terrible details. Vatihi chok b'Yisrael, it was a rule in Yisrael that miyamim yamima, pasuk mem, verse 40, miyamim yamima telachna b'nois Yisrael l'sanois l'bas yiftach hagiladi arba'as yamim bashana. It becomes a custom, which lasts for a while, that the young girls would take 4 days to remember this tragedy, perhaps to visit her, if he actually did isolate her and just didn't let her get married, so that it should be clear that such a thing should never happen again. And one thing we learn from this is the very strong power of speech, how speech changes reality. And therefore, since speech is so potent, we have so many laws about speech, so many protections, how to use our mouths in the best possible way. We should never underestimate the power of speech. With this bittersweet victory, we end the perek, but it is about to get worse. Thank you for learning in memory of our dear grandmothers, Miriam Schenker, Rachel Friedman, Teresa Schreiber, and Bella Oppenheimer, Aleim HaShalom, Neshot Chayil, who lived with utmost commitment to Torah, Avodah, Gmilas Chasadim, despite the physical and spiritual challenges they face living in the United States, Israel, or Europe. May their examples continue to inspire our families and the family of Klal Yisrael. Nina and Chaim Schenker.